Chapter 5. Emery was kneeling outside gardening when Cianney and Langston stepped through the illusion that masked the paper magician's house. He had positioned himself outside the curving garden of meticulously crafted paper flowers and seemed to be replacing all the red tulip-shaped flower heads with blue lily-shaped ones. Fennel chewed on the discarded spells as Emery worked, crumpling them in his paper mouth and then spitting the balls into an overturned trash receptacle. The paper dog yipped at the sight of Cianney.
"Langston," Emery asked as he stood and brushed off his slacks, "I didn't expect your company today."
Before the younger folder could answer, however, Cianney blurted, "Grath Cobalt is in the city, and I think I've blown up my wallet." Emery's expression turned to stone. Even his eyes darkened, reminding Cianney all too well of the third chamber of his heart, where she'd seen his failures and heartbreaks. His darkness.
"Are you sure?"
he asked, but it didn't sound like a question. In fact, the word sounded threatening. Cianney nodded. "I know him from before," she said, eyes dropping to Emery's chest for just a moment. "He spoke to me at the bistro." Emery's skin grayed.
"Both of you come inside,"
he said, turning from the garden and crushing a blue lily under his foot.
"And let's talk."
Langston headed for the crowded sitting room and sunk into the middle cushion of the sofa to make himself comfortable, but Cianney marched down the hallway to the kitchen. It was where she often went to think over difficult things. Needing something to busy her hands, she stoked the stove and filled the tea kettle with water, then sifted through the cupboards until she found dried peppermint leaves. She divided them into three ceramic cups, despite not wanting tea herself. She doubted Emery would want any either. In fact, he came into the kitchen before the water had a chance to boil. She took the kettle off the stove anyway. He stood behind her while she poured the hot water into the teacups.
"Tell me what happened."
"No one got hurt, I don't think," she said.
"No one but Grath," she supposed.
She had made the spell small enough to avoid hurting any of the other patrons, but it must have scared half the life out of them. Emery pulled the kettle from her hands and set it on the counter, then grasped her shoulders and turned her toward him.
"Cianney,"
he said, enunciating each syllable despite a hush in his voice. He stooped until his vivid green eyes peered straight into hers.
"Tell me what happened."
Cianney related her lunch date with Delilah, Grath's poor disguise, and the Excisioner's demands regarding Lyra. Emery's lips thinned more and more with every sentence, but they parted when Cianney mentioned the man's threats. Perhaps she shouldn't have repeated the conversation verbatim. Saying Grath's words with her own lips somehow gave them more weight. She turned to the dining room wall where Lyra had pinned Emery without hands and stolen his heart. She thought of the corpses trapped in the back room of the meatpacking warehouse, perhaps the most horrifying image Cianney had beheld inside Emery's heart. She thought of the uneasy warmth that had flowed through her skin when Lyra had grabbed her and started to chant. She shivered. "I would have used the mimic spell to tell you, but it was in my purse. I only ran into Langston afterward. I didn't want to involve him, but I'm afraid it's too late for that."
"I doubt he'll become a target,"
Emery said, solemn.
"But let's hope Grath didn't see him, or doesn't care. He tends to choose very specific quarries."
He took Cianney's hand, which calmed her nerves and excited a different set of them, and led her to the living room. He released her before they reached Langston's line of sight. Emery asked for his former apprentice's story, but Langston didn't have much to add, having only seen Cianney after her confrontation with Grath.
"If I could bother you with a favor, Langston," Emery said when the younger folder finished, "I'd like you to file a police report for me."
Langston pulled a sheet of paper from his breast pocket and plucked a pen from a narrow canister on the end table, enchanting it so that it would transcribe everything Cianney said as she related her tale for a second time. Langston looked ghostly when Cianney recounted Grath's threats, but he said nothing, either out of politeness or because he didn't want to ruin the transcription spell. The story told, Langston folded the transcript into eighths and slipped it into the pocket of his vest.
I'll see that it's done, he promised, smoothing the sides of his mousy brown hair. The sofa creaked as he rose.
I'm glad I ran into you when I did, Cianney. I'd hate to think, but take care.
To Emery, he said,
You know where to reach me.
Emery nodded and saw Langston to the door. He then woke Jonto and sent him outside to clean up the dead-headed flowers.
Grath was our neighbor when we lived in Berkshire,
Emery said as he shut the front door.
He went by the name Gregory, then. Worked as a rug salesman, of all things. I used to have some of his merchandise in this room.
He gestured weakly around him.
But I discarded them some time ago.
Cianney only nodded. She didn't blame him, of course. Emery had many reasons to hate Grath Cobalt. While Cianney had never found solid proof for it in his heart, she suspected Lyra had begun associating with Grath long before Emery filed any divorce papers. It shocked Cianney that Emery's heart hadn't been in pieces long before Lyra wrenched it from his chest. She rubbed her forehead.
Berkshire.
Cianney supposed the old house from Emery's memories had been located there. Do you think he's responsible for what happened at the paper mill? She asked. Her heart twisted at the thought. Could the explosion at the paper mill and all the resulting deaths be her fault? Leaning against the wall, Emery folded his arms and answered,
Possibly, but Grath doesn't like to bring attention to himself. He's too smart for that. Explosions aren't his style. If I were to link the two cases together, I'd pin the mill on Saraj.
He frowned.
I wonder if they're still working together.
Cianney swallowed her anxiety. Saraj? She had seen two people heading toward Foulness Island in that boat before she left with Emery's heart. Emery waved a dismissive hand.
Another excisioner who has some camaraderie with Grath when the mood strikes. But it doesn't matter.
He ran his fingers back through his hair.
This is getting complicated.
Cianney wanted to ask more, but the way Emery drooped made her want to lock the subject in a cellar and bury the key. Instead, she placed a hand on his folded forearms.
It will work out, one way or another. It always does.
Emery chuckled.
I find it odd that you're trying to reassure me when you're the one in trouble, my dear.
The mirth faded from his voice.
But let us hope Grath is the only excisioner in town. I really wanted to be done with a lot of them.
As Emery often did when stressed, he went to work. He pulled a thick, yard-long roll of paper out of his office and dragged it into the front yard, then instructed Cianney to get so many 8.5 by 11 inch and 6 by 6 inch sheets of paper from the rolls behind his desk. He worked without his board and with a pair of scissors that had materialized from somewhere within his indigo coat. It didn't take long for Cianney to realize he was changing the wards about the house. Not wanting to interrupt, she sat on the porch with Fennel. When Emery did need a hand, he had Jonto to assist him. He moved with remarkable swiftness, and his work was so intricate and complicated that Cianney wondered if she really could earn her magicianship in the minimum 2 years, for she obviously had much left to learn. Emery tore here, snipped there, and folded long fan folds and quad folds back and forth in seemingly random places. When he had finished, he finally addressed Cianney.
Would you go outside the gate and tell me what you see?
Cianney followed the narrow pathway from the porch to the gate and stepped out onto the lane, passing the perimeter of Emery's paper illusions. Looking back at the cottage, she didn't see a dark, haunted mansion, but a barren landscape, complete with tumbleweed and cracked sandy earth. Emery had made the house completely invisible. After a moment, Emery passed through the spell and stood out with her, his coat tossed over his shoulder from the heat. He tapped two fingers on his chin and frowned, more in his eyes than in his mouth, which worried Cianney. He said nothing, but it was clear he wasn't satisfied. Cianney made his second favorite meal, shepherd's pie, for dinner. His first favorite required halibut, of which they had none. and even prepared a gooseberry cobbler for dessert. Emery thanked her, and his words were sincere, but she could tell his mind lingered elsewhere. Wherever the paper magician went on days like this, Cianne knew she couldn't follow. His thoughts still drifted the following day, so Cianne let him be and worked on her studies, reading The Art of Eastern Origami and working on her paper doll. It wasn't until evening that Emery's mind stopped its wandering, and he announced, just as Cianne pulled a salad bowl for dinner from the cupboard, that they were leaving the cottage.
Leaving?
Cianne asked, nearly dropping the bowl.
Why?
Isn't it obvious?
Emery asked. But it wasn't. His tone concealed his thoughts, and his gaze was once again impenetrable.
Grath is here, and if you're his target, which seems to be the case, he's not leaving anytime soon. I spent years hunting this man, Cianne. Even when he knew we were closing in on him, he never took the easy way out. He always finished his business first.
His voice drooped at the end of the sentence. Cianne clasped her hands to her chest and whispered, "Was he at the warehouse?" She thought of the rotting bodies harvested for their blood and organs. Had Grath's hands torn those people apart? Her mind tried to bring up the crisp images of the bodies left rotting there, but Cianne squeezed her eyes shut and pushed them away. She returned the bowl to its cupboard, having lost her appetite.
"Him, among others,"
Emery said, perhaps more solemn than she had ever heard him. It made her heart break in two. She took a step toward him, but stopped herself. Perhaps in this instance it would be better not to overstep the bounds of an apprentice.
"It's safer this way,"
Emery said, meeting her eyes.
"I'm easy to find, even with the wards. Unfortunately, the cabinet requires open knowledge of all magician residences, which makes it incredibly hard for a man to be a recluse when he wants to be. And I don't trust the cabinet's internal security. We'll head for the city. Easy to get lost there."
Cianne set the salad bowl back, if only to give her hand something to do. "But you hate the city." Emery sighed.
"But I hate the city. I'll telegram for a buggy. You should pack. Lightly. I don't know how long we'll be gone, but we should stay mobile."
"I'm sorry about all of this."
"We should invest in one of those telephones,"
Emery said over her, flipping on his selective listening like a light switch. He hummed to himself and left the room. Upstairs, Cianne pulled her suitcase out from under her bed, but determined it was too large to carry with her should she need to leave anywhere in a hurry. Instead, she opened it and pulled out the cloth bag she had taken with her when she fell into Emery's heart. It had required a great deal of scrubbing and mending, and two patches, but she couldn't bring herself to replace it. It felt too sentimental to toss away. She folded one change of clothes, she could wash what she was wearing if need be, and set them in the base of the bag, followed by her makeup kit and hygiene products, and her book on origami, spare paper protected under its back cover. Fennel began sniffing about the bag, which he seemed to recognize from their adventure. Cianne picked him up and hugged him as tightly as one could hug a dog made of paper.
"If you want to come with me, I'll need to fold you up like before, boy. Just for a little while."
Fennel wagged his tail and huffed.
"Fold up."
Fennel licked her with his dry paper tongue, then stuck his head down and his back legs forward so Cianne could fold him into a somewhat flat, lopsided pentagon. She slid him carefully into the bag, making sure to secure him, and lifted the strap onto her shoulder. She took one last view of her room, frowned, and headed downstairs. Whatever happened, at least Emery would be with her. When the buggy arrived at 8:45, the last tendrils of the fading summer sun highlighted the clouds to the west. Emery had haphazardly packed a laundry bag half full, which he threw onto the far seat in the back of the buggy's cab. The seats must have been recently upholstered, for they smelled like new leather. Emery offered Cianne a hand into the buggy and then climbed up after her.
"To Burley Road, if you would,"
Emery called to the driver. To Cianne, he said,
"Stayed in a hotel there once. Decent place.
Cianney managed a smile. The buggy turned on its lights and circled around, plodding down the long road into London. Cooling summer air swept through the glassless windows and teased Emery's wavy hair. Shadowy trees whisked past them, thankfully shielding the river from view.
I am sorry, Emery, Cianney said, resting her hands on her bag.
It's hardly your fault, he said, and he lifted his left arm up and around her shoulders.
Cianney's heart raced against its weight, and she dared not move for fear of scaring the gesture away.
If anything, he continued, it's mine. If not for me, you wouldn't be involved in this business at all.
He paused.
Actually, no. It's Patrice Aviosky's fault for assigning you to me.
Yes, let's blame her.
Cianney laughed and stifled a yawn.
I'm glad she did, though.
You are certainly the most amusing apprentice I've had, Emery said in a strange sort of agreement. Langston was the dullest.
He's not much younger than you.
No, he's not, Emery said.
His thumb absently traced the edge of Cianney's braid, and Cianney thanked the darkness for hiding the reddening of her cheeks.
I was only 24 when I took him on, just 2 years out of my own apprenticeship. But the number of folders had declined so rapidly that Praff was assigning to just about anyone. It was either me or sail across the ocean to New Orleans. Langston stayed in England to pursue a girl.
Clearing her throat and trying not to focus on Emery's closeness, Cianney asked, Is he married now? Emery chuckled.
Goodness, no. She wrote him quite the scathing letter 2 weeks into his apprenticeship. He was a bucket of sap for a month after that, but his focus improved in the end. Daniel, however, was a different story. He's the reason I moved to the cottage and started warding the gate.
Cianney let herself relax in her seat. Emery's arm remained around her shoulders. Was he a troublemaker?
A flirt. An awful one at that, but somehow he attracted women who fell for his questionable charms,
Emery said thoughtfully.
I had a new one on my doorstep every week, or so it seemed. That boy would have taken 6 years to earn his magicianship at the rate he was going. But another reason our time was cut short was the timing. And, well, you already know about that.
Cianney nodded, swallowing another yawn. She had only learned a snippet about Emery's second apprentice from her journey through Emery's heart. All she knew was that he had to be transferred because of issues with Lyra. Emery chuckled.
One girl who came by couldn't have been a day out of secondary. Tall as Langston. Daniel was a rather short fellow and seemed put out by her visit, but I invited her in, thinking maybe it would dissuade him from handing out my address like Halloween candy.
A jolt in the road startled Cianney awake. She hadn't realized she'd dozed off, and perhaps Emery hadn't either, for he was still chatting away beside her. Her head rested against his shoulder, and she straightened quickly, a new flush burning her skin.
And it was shrimp,
he said, shaking his head.
Who put shrimp and sweet cream in the same dish? Certainly you've never heard of such a thing.
Cianney blinked sleep from her eyes. It sounds like a soup I've seen in Devonshire, she said. I don't think...
She squinted through the windshield of the vehicle. Was that a person on the road, just beyond the glow of the buggy's lights? The light fanned over him, and time stopped. The man jerked his arm upward. The windshield didn't shatter, and Cianney heard no pistol fire, but the driver's head jerked backward, spurting black blood over his seat and the windshield. The driver slumped in his seat, falling against the steering wheel. The buggy's headlamps pulled away from the road, illuminating plants, earth, and finally, to Cianney's horror, the dark, churning water of the river. Emery gripped her shoulder, pressing his other hand against the ceiling to brace himself. Time started again when the buggy hit the black water. Cianney jerked forward and grabbed the seat in front of her. Pain shot up her wrists. Darkness flooded the cab. Cold water pooled at her feet. Snow-cold chills spread from Cianney's chest into her limbs, freezing her solid. Her thoughts shut down. Her heart stopped beating. Her throat went dry. Her legs turned numb. No, 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 she cried. But her voice sounded from somewhere else, somewhere distant. Water poured into the buggy, climbing like thousands of chilled spiders up her calves, knees, thighs. Emery pushed against the door as water gushed in through the buggy's glassless window. The entire car slanted, its nose pushing for the river bottom. Drowning. She was drowning. Tears poured down her cheeks, but she still couldn't move, not even as the water climbed up her legs and over the seat, up her blouse. I'm going to pull you out, Emery said, his words airy and quick. No, 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 Cianni muttered, wide-eyed, clutching to the upholstery with white knuckles. No, 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 no. Emery grabbed her arms, yanking them away from the driver's seat, and hooked them around his neck. Take a deep breath, he shouted. Hold on to me. Don't breathe again until we're out. The water climbed to her stomach, her breasts, her collar. She started convulsing. Emery cursed, inhaled deeply, and sealed his lips shut just as the water flooded above their chins, foreheads, crowns. Cianni squeezed her eyes shut and dug her nails into Emery's neck, clinging to the fabric of his collar. She moved forward, jerked, and felt the top of the buggy window scrape against her back and thighs. The next thing she knew, darkness engulfed her. Everything was cold, save for Emery's neck and the burning in her lungs. She felt him kicking beside her. But the water? It didn't end. It didn't end! And suddenly, Cianni was 7 years old again, falling into the Henderson's fish pond, thrashing for the surface, but only finding handfuls of mud and silt. She couldn't breathe. And then the wetness broke, and warm summer air touched her skin. Cianni sputtered and sucked in a hot breath, which scorched her throat like fire. She cleaved to Emery in the weightlessness of the water, like she was falling. Emery urged her. One arm was wrapped tightly around her torso, pressing her to him, while the other swam back and forth, treading water. Then he stopped moving, and they began to sink. Cianni cried out, but the hand gripping her waist shot up and covered her mouth. Emery kicked, and they floated once more, only this time Emery held a small plastic case in his hand. He used his teeth to open it. Inside rested a folded piece of paper. He pinched it in his mouth, dropped the plastic case, and grabbed the paper with his waiting arm. The water started to pull them under, but Emery whispered, "Conceal," and threw the paper into the air. Cianni watched it unfurl in the starlight, expanding until it hovered over them like an umbrella a few feet above the water. Emery continued to tread, inching toward the shore, the conceal spell following them as they went. Conscious thoughts trickled back to Cianni, bit by bit, through the remnants of her panic. The buggy? The water? How had she gotten to the surface? Emery? She squinted toward the road in the starlight, just barely able to see a silhouette there, at the edge of the bank. The man in the lights. She had seen a man. Her feet hit muddy ground, and Emery stopped moving, his eyes glued to the figure he too had noticed. A light appeared farther down the road. Another buggy. For a brief moment, it highlighted the tall, lanky form of the man standing there, his curly hair and dark skin. Cianni squinted, thinking she recognized him, but he vanished in a cloud of smoke before she could place him. The buggy lights slowed their approach, the driver perhaps perceiving the signs of the accident. Both of Emery's arms embraced Cianni as the water floated around them. I'm sorry. He whispered into her wet hair. I'm so sorry. It's all right now. You're all right. He kissed her forehead. Cianni came fully back to herself. She realized she was still crying, her tears scorching compared to the cold river water. Her teeth chattered. Cianni buried her face in Emery's wet clothes, shivering, and stayed that way until a second set of buggy lights appeared on the road. Someone beamed a gaffer light out onto the water. They're looking for us, Emery whispered. Reveal, he said, and the spell hiding them folded itself back up and dropped into the water. Emery let the current carry it away. Then he helped Cianni up and guided her to the steep shore. She clung to him, not even loosening her grip when he waved one arm to the searchers, asking for help. One of them returned to his car, perhaps for rope or another light.
That wasn't Grath,
Cianni murmured.
No, it wasn't,
Emery agreed. Cianni detected familiarity in those words. Whoever their attacker had been, Emery knew him.